fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
And welcome to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio, coming at you for the week of June 9th, 10th, 11th. We are here in June of 2022, and we have an exciting action-packed show for you tonight. I'm going to give you my usual news roundup and update on this week's happening. And then we have a special guest, a guest who I just can't wait to bring on, is Dr. Patrick Moore, one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, the environmental group, who about 1986 had his moment, his reevaluation, if you will, moment of clarity on the environment and climate. And Patrick Moore left Greenpeace, and he is here to tell his story of his journey and talk about the latest climate, energy, environmental news, debunk some myths. And he, of course, is the author of Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout, a fantastic book. We've had him testify before the United States Senate. And I first met Patrick back in the 1990s when I was working on the Amazon Rainforest documentary, which was, I went down to Brazil in 1998 to 99. And Patrick was instrumental in that and gave some incredible commentary, analysis. And he's going to be on. We'll maybe talk a little bit about that, but he's going to talk more about climate and what's going on in the world today, climate, energy, and the environment. In that regard, this week, it has just been another wacky week in the world of climate, energy, environment news, and just in politics in general. I ended last week's show, I was talking about the New York Times praising inflation as a way to drive welcome change for the planet, adjust what we eat to save both our pocketbooks and our planet. And what's amazing about this has now gone essentially mainstream. We have now Biden's energy secretary, I'm sorry, commerce secretary, saying now that the brutal reality is that there isn't very much to be done on gas prices, and has literally blamed it at the feet of Vladimir Putin. She says, unfortunately, this is Gina Raimondo, commerce secretary, saying this is in large part caused by Vladimir Putin's aggression, and there's not much less action that Joe Biden can take. In other words, they've washed their hands of it. $5, $6, $7, some predictions of $10 a gallon gas, not to mention skyrocketing energy costs, shortages, supply chain issue, and predictions of blackouts and brownouts in major parts of the United States. Even CNN is saying this is going to be one of the biggest, the worst blackouts that will exceed the 1970s Arab oil embargo and the stagflation and energy crisis we had back then. People in their lifetimes aren't going to see what's happening and what's even coming here. And why do we know more bad things are coming? Well, it's just because of Biden's commerce secretary. The brutal reality is there isn't very much to be done. And essentially, there's not much action left that Biden can take. They've washed their hands of this whole issue. And this is where we are 2 years into a Joe Biden administration. And what I like to tell people, and it's important that we remind them, these are the intended consequences of these climate energy policies. If you go back, and it's not that hard to go back, you can go back to less than 15 years ago, starting as your start point. And this is where you have Obama's first energy secretary, Stephen Chu, said he favored gas prices at the levels of Europeans. And then he has forced to recant that later under testimony, was trying to become energy secretary. But that's the first instinct of these climate activists. They love that. So bingo, we are there. We're passing where Europe was back then. Former U.S. Obama Treasury official Mark Mazur said this in March of 2022. We don't want lower prices for fossil fuel buyers. We prefer higher prices to achieve, quote, climate change goals. He said the quiet part out loud. And then, of course, Biden's current energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, we got to leave you in the ground, gasoline. She did a video singing about the end of gas and fossil fuels. Gasoline, gasoline, the world's aflame. Direct lyrics from her due to global warming. Then you just had the Davos meeting in Davos, Switzerland with the World Economic Forum. The Norwegian finance CEO, Kirsten Bredén, said the energy transition will create energy shortages and inflations, but the pain is actually worth it, in quotes. Now, think about that. It's so worth it, as you're literally, people can't even get now jobs for waiters and waitresses. I'm in Virginia in the United States. And you can, there's restaurants that can't even hire people because it's not worth it for lower wage workers to even drive to their job, given the price of fuel. Biden praises the high gas prices as part of the incredible transition away from fossil fuels. Now, here's a key point, and I made this on a previous episode of here on TNT Radio, but it's worth repeating briefly. They say it's literally so worth it, like the Norwegian CEO. Biden says it's an incredible transition. Jen Psaki says that the rise in gas prices makes an even stronger case for doubling down on green energy solutions. Now, here's the thing. They literally, ideologically view this as this, what we're going through now, inflation, debt, spending, supply chain, shortages, blackouts, brownouts, $5, $7, $8 a gallon gasoline, as chemotherapy for the climate. In other words, it's going to be painful. It's going to be miserable. We're going to have a lot of suffering, but just think on the other end, we're going to have a climate utopia. We're going to have hurricanes. This is when the rise of the sea level will begin to fall, as President Obama famously said. So what they actually believe in their world, in their vision, in their ideology, in their religion, whatever you want to call it, their vision is this utopia is going to occur. And yes, you have to break some eggs to make an omelet, and there's going to be a lot of suffering in the short term, just the way chemo, you lose your hair, you vomit, you lose weight, you go through misery, it's an all-out assault on your body, but it's so worth it because when the end, you're going to be cancer-free. Well, in the end, we're going to be free of the climate emergency once we make this transition. It's literally a direct analogy. Of course, the problem here is if we actually had the cancer that they claim, the solution, their version of chemo would have no impact on the cancer. But here's the ultimate. We don't even have the cancer. We've been diagnosed, misdiagnosed by a quack. And that quack was Al Gore. And that quack's medical practice was the UN IPCC and the people like James Hansen and this Kapala scientists, chiefly in the modeling community of the climate world, who project when current reality fails to alarm, we make scarier and scarier predictions of the future. And we'll ask Patrick more about that because there's a new study out, I think, on clouds where he commented on. But as part of this chemotherapy for the planet and for your lives, you know, they just keep going. And the New York Times, I mentioned this, they basically in 2012 said if we could double gas prices, essentially, few dollars a gallon increase, we could literally achieve climate stability, quote, result in climate stability. So based on what they wrote in 2012, Biden has granted the earth climate stability. Can't we just declare victory and go home, as so many people say we should have done in Vietnam? Why can't we just do that with the climate? It doesn't work that way. There's no end game to this. It's not about, there was a great analysis today on Twitter. Someone made the comment that essentially, if I think it was Mark Mathis from the Clear Energy Alliance, and it was a very good point. And the point was this: if people could actually, if carbon capture technology actually worked, and we could actually get battery storage and solar and wind, and we could actually replace fossil fuels with the same kind of lifestyles and production, the environmentalists would drop it like a hot potato because they're not actually interested in maintaining anything. They're interested in transforming the human race existence into their vision that they believe is climate friendly. And that is the key here. So you're not actually playing, you're not actually having an honest discussion. They want to create a chaos, collapse the current system. In the words of Vladimir Lenin in Tsarist Russia, when he was trying to impose his ideology, the worse the better. And that's why I always say in my reports, somewhere a climate activist is smiling when you report out the latest reports of gas prices, of electricity prices, of blackouts, of brownouts. Another interesting thing is a UN climate scientist, Thomas Stocker, and this is, I think, 2010. Let me just get the year on this because it's important to know this. How long, this is 2011. UN climate expert Thomas Stocker proposed tripling the price of gas to save the planet. And he says, Canadians may abhor the rising price of gas, but he said the planet will be better off if it soared 3 to 4 times its current level. This is scandalous, I know, said the UN stalker, adding sky-high gasoline could help slow the climate change, which the world has declared one of the greatest challenges of our time. So in other words, what we're experiencing right now is the exact blueprint, solution, and advocacy program that they've been talking about for decades. So don't let anyone tell you, well, it's Putin's fault. Gas began rising the first day of Joe Biden's administration. And Obama was very ineffectual when you look back. They had a lot more work to do. But Biden learned you don't bother with cap and trade like Obama did. You don't bother with proposing some bill at the EPA and implement. You just go through every agency's a cabinet agency. You implement it. They don't need no stinking democracy. We've come a long way since Obama. And it's amazing to see how rapid and fast. And then you add to this, the World Bank, Nicholas Stern, former president at a World Bank meeting about a month ago, announced the end, wanted to end financing for the internal combustion engine. So now we're talking about essentially mandated electric cars. And then you have Joe Biden doing a national electric grid of electric charging, which would be what? In control of the federal government. It's not going to be like when we had Henry Ford invented the Model T and mass transportation came and you had mom and pop gas stations springing up all over the country. This is going to be a centralized grid that, guess what? We have another pandemic. We have an emergency. The federal government can shut you down from charging your vehicles and even shut down your vehicle if you're not compliant. You didn't wear a mask this week. Your vehicle's going to be shut down as punishment. You supported some protests you weren't supposed to against the government. Well, then your car will be shut down. Your ability to charge will be shut down. And the UN and MasterCard's new carbon tracking footprint, if you've overspent, your ability to spend will be shut down. You can see where this is all heading. It's all part and parcel of the climate agenda. I made a point earlier, too, and this was actually originally I saw it on What's Up With That, Anthony Watts' great website, about Biden's blood panels, solar panel imports built on the blood of persecuted Chinese minorities. You have all these people talking about equity. First of all, talking about equity and disadvantaged minorities and Hispanics and Blacks. How could high energy prices be anything but the least equitable thing any progressive could support? Yet they support it. They advocate it for decades. They think it's fantastic. The meat shortages they love because it's great for the planet and people aren't going to be eating cows as much. And so we, at the same time, we're buying our energy from China. 90% of the solar imports of solar panels are coming from China. We're not allowed to mine here in the United States, whether it's lithium, cobalt, lanthanide, rare earth mining, or we're very limited mining. So we have to outsource it to countries like China with horrible human rights records, with the Uyghur Muslim oppressed minority, even with the cobalt in Africa, allegations of China employing kids as young as 9 by international human rights groups. This is the situation we are in. So we have the blood panels. Do you think people would actually realize if you're offended by blood diamonds and that's not right, and you believe in this idea of the forest certification where everyone's paid, or the coffee has the same type of thing where the coffee is fair trade and everyone's paid well and has benefits, but yet you have no problem buying solar panels from China and transforming. It makes no sense. Another analysis by Steve Moore, the economist on the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, gas prices highest in the blue states. Interesting. This just is all about regulation. So if you look at the bluest states, in the United States, you will see that the gas prices are the highest in all the Democrat, progressive, liberal run states. The red states, of course, have the cheapest gas prices. And as, again, that's just a small snippet into some of the regulatory thing because they just like higher prices. They like higher gas prices. Biden is now talking about traveling to the Middle East and essentially, and this is the words, begging Saudi Arabia to increase oil production to help the Democrats in the midterm. Even the White House realizes that politically, this chemotherapy / climate energy transition we're going through is a political disaster. So he wants to go to the Middle East, beg the Saudi government for more oil. I made the point on One America News this week, he should be begging U.S. drillers for more oil. He should be visiting Texas and Oklahoma and Pennsylvania and all over the United States, begging the United States and opening up America, not going to to countries with dubious human rights records and lower environmental standards and begging them to increase. We have just got it so ass backwards here. And I hope that word's acceptable on TNT radio. So, but it's essentially the economic chaos here is good. This is what they're looking for. I may have mentioned this last week, but I don't know if I actually had the story out. Prince Charles is backing face masks for cows in his bid to tackle climate change. Not making this up. Prince Charles is working with, worried about the methane and is a startup company. And he's worked with it. He has photographed with a cow, with a prototype, with a mask on its face. This is the insanity of the world. And of course, a physicist, Dr. Tom Sheehan, methane, the irrelevant greenhouse gas, water vapor has already absorbed the very same infrared radiation. Tiny increases associated with cows may elicit a few giggles, but is absolutely cannot be the basis for sane regulations or national policy, which means it is the basis for sane regulation and national policy. So this week also there, Biden invoked the Defense Production Act to boost, to help us during our energy crisis. So what did he use it for? Are they going to open up coal mines? Are they going to do more fracking? Are they going to do more oil drilling? No, they're going to boost solar panel manufacturing in the U.S. So they're going to get the least reliable energy source and one of the lowest performing in terms of how many units per energy it produces compared to in other words, one worker in a coal plant can produce what 70 some workers in a solar manufacturing plant can produce in terms of energy. So what's happening here is this is all part and parcel to this baseline. This Defense Production Act are wartime presidential powers. They are trying to essentially lay the groundwork for a international climate emergency, national climate emergency, which Chuck Schumer, House Democrats are urging Biden to declare, would give him blue state governor type powers under COVID, odd even days, banning car use in the cities on certain days, declaring climate crisis, setting thermostat controls. This is where we're headed. And you don't need no stinking vote of any legislator for it. So, it's amazing. And there's another analysis on American Thinker. The rolling blackouts are just part of the plan. The left is executing its long held agenda to put us back in the dark ages. And I mentioned, I think last week, where the carrying capacity of the earth by many people, including Hans Schulenhuber, the German climate advisor, is only 1 billion people. So they want to eliminate 6-7 billion people on the earth to make it more earth friendly. And then this is my last clip. I'm going to play this. This is Biden's Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, saying the critical thing is we become more dependent on the wind and the sun. This is this week testifying.
Given the global nature of these markets, it's virtually impossible for us to insulate ourselves from shocks like the ones that are occurring in Russia that move global oil prices. And look, over the medium term, the critical thing is that we become more dependent on the wind and the sun.
There it is. That's what the Biden administration is taking from everything we just talked about. $5, $7, $8 a gallon gas, shortages, brownouts. The critical thing is we become more dependent on the wind and sun. This is his freaking Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. This is their message. Let's double down on everything that's caused where we are, shutting down fossil fuels and mandating solar and wind, which is unreliable and produces very little energy by comparison. So with that, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have Dr. Patrick Moore on for the remainder of the show. And we're going to go through a whole series of climate energy. We'll do rapid fire questions. I want to ask him about the possible merging of COVID and climate, some of the new studies on that, saying that unchecked climate change will lead to more COVID and more viruses. For the Mark Morano Show, I'm Mark Morano on TNT Radio. We'll be right back after this message.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
From climate change to foreign policy, and from economics to censorship, this is The Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to The Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We are joined now by the sensible environmentalist, Dr. Patrick Moore, author of Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout, one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, despite the fact that Greenpeace has tried to airbrush him out, a la Stalin, who did the Commissar Vanishes. The Wayback Machine was the bane of Greenpeace on this, because the Wayback Machine on the internet showed that in Greenpeace's own website, they listed Dr. Patrick Moore as one of their co-founders, but later they scrubbed it out and hoped no one would notice. Of course, Google went along with what Greenpeace did, but the Wayback Machine saved the historical record and Greenpeace had egg all over their face. But I want to welcome Dr. Patrick Moore to our program. Thank you for joining us tonight, Patrick.
It's great to be with you, old friend. Mark, nice to be here.
Thank you. Yes, I was telling in the introduction earlier that we first met in the 1990s when I was working on the Amazon rainforest, clear cutting the mist. I believe we met in Atlanta. I interviewed you in Atlanta. And I may have been before that. I met you in DC as well. And I had followed your work for years. And I've always considered your writings like probably the best on environment, climate, and energy, because you were like almost a lone voice, especially back in the 90s when I got involved in this debate. You were instrumental in my Amazon rainforest film. You had gone to the Amazon, and we featured your interviews all throughout the documentary, which was released in the year 2000. But it was incredible. And people forget that back in the 80s and 90s, the deforestation Amazon rainforest was the environmental issue of the day. You had Sting's rainforest concert, National Geographic, Hollywood. What do you think happened to that whole movement? It sort of faded. It's still around, but it's not the number one issue. It got replaced by climate. How did that happen, do you think?
I don't know why it happened, but I know it was an exact carbon copy of all the other scare stories. It was about somewhere that almost no one had ever seen. And so they showed fires up close, so it looked like the whole world was burning. And in fact, that place is nearly as big as half the United States. And yes, only five, even today, only 5% of it has been converted into beautiful agricultural land. I mean, the rest of it is still, they call it a human desert because there's so few people that actually live there. It's not a hospitable place for people. It's hot and humid. And there's a lot of mosquitoes, and the Amazon floods 300 miles. So it's 300 miles across when it floods. So there'll never be a bridge across it in a million years. And so they just make this stuff up, and then they show images up close of fires. And you think the whole world's going to burn up. And that is, of course, the theme of my newest book, which is Fake Invisible Catastrophes and Threats of Doom. That all the scare stories are based on things that are either invisible, like carbon dioxide, radiation, and whatever is supposed to be bad in GMOs, which doesn't even have a name or a chemical formula. Everything has a name. So if it doesn't have a name, it doesn't exist. So they're scaring us and making a $1 billion campaign against something really important in the advancement of agriculture and nutrition and disease. In the case of golden rice, curing vitamin A, if they would let people have it, they are stopping that in the name of something that doesn't exist. Now, carbon dioxide and radiation do exist, and they are invisible, so you can make up stories about them that are hard to counter. And then there's things that are so remote, like polar bears, coral reefs, and the Amazon, that almost no one can go and see for themselves what's going on. And it comes down to the fact that the basis of science is the beginning of science is observation. There is no science if there's no observation, not just with your eyes, but with your smell, your taste, your hearing, with Geiger counters, with X-rays, all kinds of ways of observing the universe, and right from macro to micro. If you have an observation and it looks, oh, that's cool. It looks like maybe this thing is causing this thing. I have observed that. So what you do then is what's called verification. You observe it over and over again under the same circumstances, making sure there are not too many outside variables that are affecting what might be a cause-effect relationship. And if you see that it wasn't a fluke, it was something you could repeat over and over again, you give it out to the rest of the scientific community and say, can you replicate this? And if they can, you've got a theory. And so it's observation, verification, replication. Science is not a thing. They talk about the science, the climate science. Yeah. That's not how it works. Science is a process of discovery, which begins with a single observation. And that's why the whole thing about consensus of the climate crisis is ludicrous. There's no place for consensus in science. Science is nearly always advanced by individuals who observed something, whether it was Galileo or Newton or Einstein or the founder of genetics. His name is escaping me because I'm not as good with names as I used to be. And then there's Einstein. When Einstein published his theory of relativity, he was a patent clerk in an office. He had his PhD, but he didn't have a position. He published it, and 100 established scientists published that Einstein was wrong. Yeah. They said, there's no way. And you know what he said when 100 scientists said he was wrong? Why 100? It only takes one to prove that I'm wrong, right? And that is a very important aspect in science. And so that's where I am at now with this whole climate change thing is trying to get people to understand that they're having the wool pulled over their eyes because they can't see CO2 and they can't see what it's doing. They just say, oh, it's a greenhouse gas. Well, yes, it is, but it's a very minor one. And there are very many other factors that can affect the climate and completely override the effect of CO2. You can't override the effect of H2O, though, water. I mean, it is ubiquitous in gaseous, liquid, and solid form, and it is one of the main contributors to the moderation of the Earth's climate as to how warm it is and all that sort of thing. But it is so stupid, this whole climate crisis thing. They've got it wrong on every count, saying CO2 is too high. No, it's too low. CO2 is lower than plants would prefer it. And it has been higher almost the whole of the history of life. It's only the last million years that it has come down to levels that are basically starvation diet for the plants on this planet. So if you raise the CO2 to 800 to 1200 ppm, 2 to 3 times what it is today, you would have a much lusher Earth, and it may get a little bit warmer. But that would be a good thing because actually, look behind me. I'm halfway to the North Pole from the equator, and there's still snow here in June on the mountains. And so we're in an ice age. It's called the Pleistocene Ice Age. We're in an interglacial period, one of about 40, during that 2.6 million year ice age that we are still in. This is the coldest it's been this last couple of million years in 250 million years. Before that, it was warmer all the time because the previous ice age called the Karoo lasted 100 million years and it ended 250 million years ago. And here we are with the next ice age, 250 million years later, only 2.5 million years old. It could go for another 50 million years, this ice age. But the truth is, during the warm periods when there was no ice on the poles, for tens of millions of years at a time, life flourished more on the Earth than it does under this cold regime of temperature that we have today. So it's colder now than it should be. There's less CO2 now than there should be. And there's no evidence that CO2 is the cause of the 1 degree plus slightly more than 1 degree increase in temperature over the last 300 years. This is a perfectly normal situation because the fluctuation of temperature from the Minoan warm period about 3,000 years ago, to the Roman warm period 2,000 years ago, the medieval warm period 1,000 years ago, and now the modern warm period, which is about 300 years old, there is nothing abnormal about it. In fact, the Little Ice Age, which was between the medieval warm period and our little bit of warming, is the coldest it's been in 8,000 years. Because the fact is, the Holocene, which is the name given to this 10, 12,000 year interglacial period that we are in now, has become cooler over the last 6,000 years. This is well established. During the interglacial time when we had the Holocene thermal maximum, climate optimum, as they call it, the Sahara Desert was green from one side to the other during that period for about 5,000 years. And then it dried out and we went into a colder period, which we're still in today. We are not warming up even to the level that the Holocene was at its initial period. All of the interglacial periods seem to go up quickly to a peak, stay there for a while, and then gradually for 80,000 years, go back into the next glacial maximum. And this is all established through ice cores in Antarctica and Greenland. And it's enough to drive you crazy that people just completely ignore all of that and say that there's a climate crisis because there's too much CO2 and it's getting too hot. It's so ridiculous.
Well, the United Nations claims, I guess, post-1950, more than 50% of the warming is caused by man. It's an expert judgment by the handpicked scientists there. How do they come up with something like that where they claim, they pick a year and they say, since that year, more than 50% of the warming is caused by man's emissions?
They have absolutely no way of determining that through science. There is no way. And they've even admitted twice, once in 2001, once in 2018, deep into their documents, they have admitted something. This is just about an exact quote. Because the global climate is multifactorial, in other words, has many factors affecting it, nonlinear, in other words, it isn't straight lines everywhere. There's curves going all over the place and changing their shape, and chaotic. That's the clincher. You cannot see through chaos. That is the definition of chaos, turbulence. When a boat is going through the water and then speeds up and suddenly it causes turbulence flow on the bow, you can't write a computer model that can predict where each molecule of that water is in when it's turbulent. It's unpredictable. Chaos actually means unpredictable. And that is why we can't see through the future by just taking a bunch of variables and putting them in a computer. And most of those variables are somebody's assumption. They're not even something that has been actually determined categorically. So it is impossible to predict what's going to happen to the climate in the future. I would suggest, judging by the history we've had over the last 6,000-8,000 years, it will probably, from now, continue to warm very slightly for the next 300-400 years, and then it will begin to cool again, because that's what's happened four times since the three times, this one being the fourth, since the Minoan warm period. That's the cycle that has been going on. There is no indication that the Earth is too hot. The thing is, that's absolutely true. Biodiversity is highest in the tropics. There's not hardly any biodiversity on the North Pole, and I don't believe there's a living thing in the center of Antarctica, except for one station with people in it that have the technology to keep them alive there and food flown in. You know, it's absolutely obvious that species biodiversity is higher where it's warmer. And so therefore, if the North and the South get warmer, their biodiversity will increase. And the only reason polar bears exist is because of climate change. And yet they're saying that polar bears are going to go extinct because of climate change. They wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the ice on the Arctic Ocean giving them the opportunity to hunt seals. Most people don't realize the polar bear evolved from the Eurasian brown bear, which we call grizzly bear. They are the same species. The Eurasian brown bear, like people and reindeer, came to the New World across the land bridge when the glaciations occurred and the Bering Bridge was there from Asia to North America. And so the polar bear did not exist before the Pleistocene Ice Age came into being. And that was probably only about 1.5 million years ago when it was possible to go out on the ice if you were a brown bear. And so that separated those that species into two separate populations, one that stayed on the land and another bunch that went out on the ice. And eventually through evolution, it's called divergent evolution, where one species becomes two because they have occupied very different environments, and that changes their genetic makeup over time, much time. It probably took more than 500,000 years for the polar bear to become what it is today, quite distinct, 1.5 times larger with white fur and a modified diet, modified digestive system for a much more carnivorous diet than its brothers and sisters on the land, which are still brown and called Eurasian brown bears. So that the very idea that getting warmer would be worse than getting colder, that is the stupidest thing. The little ice age it was only a couple of degrees warmer than colder than now. And there were crop failures and famines in all of the cold periods. The Dark Ages was a dark age because it was a cold period, partly. That's when all the famines and pestilence and people dying by the thousands.
You know, and witch trials, right?
Yeah, and then there was the witch trials, yeah. And go back, and the native people here were throwing virgins into volcanoes thinking that was going to bring better weather. And, you know, and people today now are calling weather climate change. It started with global warming. Then when it didn't warm for 10, 15 years, they changed it to climate change. So now you could blame anything on climate change. But when you said, yeah, but it was really very cold last winter, they say, oh, no, that's just weather. That's not climate.
Yeah.
Because, of course, climate is supposed to be the average weather over 50 years or 30 years or whatever. And now every storm is climate change. Every flood is climate change. Everything is climate change. The next thing you know, they'll blame volcanoes and earthquakes on climate change.
Well, let me read you this. Let's talk about a current application. This is a lawsuit by 14 children, one as young as 9 years old, 9 through age 18. They're suing the state of Hawaii. They're alleging that highways are causing global warming because the Hawaii has consistently prioritized building highways. And here's what they say. Because of the climate pollution, children in Hawaii are experiencing grave threats to their ability to live healthful lives in the Hawaiian Islands now and in the future. And it goes on, and it literally is blaming, it's saying that extreme droughts, heavy rains caused by climate change are reducing crop yields and threatening the state's ability to continue their cultural practices. So they have these kids recruited suing because of the level of CO2 and because there's too many highways. And they're doing it. They want the state to ensure their climate future. How do we go from everything you just talked to this is what children are now being recruited to sue over, bad weather in a state caused by too many highways? What's your comment on this lawsuit?
To Hawaii. I couldn't imagine anybody could survive there. It's just terrible. It's a terrible place to go. I mean, there's all this beautiful forest and waterfalls and ocean, and the ocean is warm. Imagine having to have a warm ocean around you. And coral reefs. I mean, there's coral reefs there in Hawaii, and I'm sure they're all dying. They must be. Actually, I took a look, and it seemed pretty happy to me. This whole thing about the coral reefs dying, of course, is again because they're invisible. And only a very, very small percentage of people do extensive research underwater on coral reefs. And so when they said that 93% of the Great Barrier Reef was dead or dying, oh yeah, they never say dead. They say dying or nearly dead. Forbes magazine said that the reefs were in their last terminal stage, their final terminal stage. as if there are other terminal stages before the final one, right? But that still doesn't mean dead. You can be in a terminal stage. You're not dead, right? They think you are going to be dead, but you aren't dead yet. So that's how they get away with that. And then they say it's the bleaching. And you look at these white corals. Well, that's because the animal in the coral is clear. It has no color. It's only the plankton that they associate themselves with that have color. So when they spit the plankton out, which is called bleaching, it's not like they're pouring bleach on the coral and killing it. So they use this word bleaching, which has nothing to do with actual bleaching, as most people understand it. And they assume that that means the coral is going to die. But it's actually totally false. The corals usually recover from bleaching or ejecting their symbiotic plankton. The coral is a really interesting species, and I haven't got time to talk about the biology of it here, but the coral reefs are not dying. And in particular, the healthiest coral reefs with the most species of corals and reef fish are in the warmest ocean in the world, which is the coral triangle of Indonesia, Paul and Solomon Islands, and there's 600 species of coral there. There's nowhere else on Earth that has anywhere near that many species of coral. And it is a fact that the Caribbean, which is the second warmest ocean in the world, has lost 50% of its coral species in the cooling that has happened over the last 50 million years coming out of the Eocene thermal maximum, which was a really nice warm period on the Earth. So if the Earth warmed, the coral would actually expand its range to take advantage of the warmer waters that would be created by a warming world. Finland still wouldn't have coral reefs, though, and neither would England or Canada. But they would spread over the tropical areas of the Earth and become much more biodiverse if the Earth warmed up. It's just a fact.
We're going to take a break right now. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back with more of ecologist Dr. Patrick Moore. Right back at you on TNT.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
This hasn't been reported yet. It seems that the fallout from COVID, the fallout from all the pandemic measures where they shut down the health services, they told us, you know, stay at home to save the NHS, save the health services. They basically shut down regular healthcare services to so many people. And even now, all of these months later, after these restrictions and all these various regulations have been eased, off and lifted, that people are still struggling to get access to their GPs, to normal health care. It's like they shut it down and they don't want to open it up again, but they're sending you vaccine invitations every 5 minutes via SMS messaging. I mean, it's insane. Kevin's going to join us in the second hour to help break down this breaking story, and it's affecting people up in this part of the UK as well. We've got some firsthand counts there that can be sharing with us. That's obviously a battle that we're just going to be fighting.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. Give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're here with Dr. Patrick Moore, author of Fake Invisible Catastrophe and Threats of Doom, came out in 2021, and it is a fantastic book. Patrick, tell us a little bit about, you know, this net zero agenda, what's going on in Europe. You know, you have people saying that Vladimir Putin is responsible for high energy prices, at least here in the United States. That's what they're blaming it on. What is net zero rot in Europe? Is Europe now closer to some climate utopia because they've embraced net zero climate emissions, CO2 emissions?
Well, they're still talking the talk, but not walking the walk exactly, because they're burning more coal now than they have done for quite a while because they're trying to avoid buying Russian gas. And Russia might just cut them off like they did Poland and Hungary. and because they won't pay for it in rubles and all that stuff. So it's got very little to do with Putin in the first place. It's got to do with the war on fossil fuels. And if you look at the United States and what Biden has done, canceling pipelines, canceling drilling permits, canceling all kind of things, and making it, but the biggest irony of the whole thing is, like, the demand for fossil fuels is very strong, a strong demand. It's not like, oh, I won't bother using my fossil fuels today because, well, then I can't drive my car and I can't cook my food and blah, blah, blah. So yeah. You can't just turn the tap off and everybody does something different. And that's what the reason, you know, people don't understand economics. There's a thing called elasticity of supply and demand. And when there is a shortage of something, the price just skyrockets because there's competition for something that is in short supply that people need every day. If there's a surplus, the price goes down. But the great irony in all this is that the big oil and gas companies are happy with net zero because they make way bigger profits. So they're in the game. They don't have to fight on the climate subject. But the fact is, this is global suicide pact, this net zero thing. 3 billion people would die if they actually succeeded in what they're trying to say, maybe more, because about 3 billion of us depend on the fertilizer that is made with fossil fuels. And just go on and on from there as to the transportation systems. Like, I saw somebody from the UN proposing that there should be a ban on intercontinental flights.
Yes.
In other words, jet planes taking people for holidays in the tropics or whatever, right? Or business people going to Europe. Oh, no, it wouldn't apply to them because they have private planes, and those would not be affected by the ban on commercial airliners. So the whole thing comes down to a conspiracy by the elites, the guy who said you'll own nothing and be happy.
Yes. Yeah, that was the World Economic Forum. Yeah, if they're trying to make seaside vacations, back to like it was 100 years ago. Only the very wealthy could afford that. They take away cheap travel, cheap energy. Who's not going to be affected? The wealthiest in our world. That's incredible. We had the spectacle of in 2019, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson authorized pouring cement into the fracking wells in Europe, in England. For as a sort of show of solidarity with net zero, 50 plus years of natural gas supply had concrete poured into the wells. What kind of suicidal mentality do you have? Do you think they actually like now get away from the motive and the true believers, but the politicians in Europe, the Boris Johnsons, the Macrons, what was the German, the prime minister? I know that the Angela Merkel. Did they actually believe this rhetoric, you think, or do they just, virtue signal and don't really think it through?
I don't know, because Merkel in particular is a scientist, and yet she bought into this thing holus bolus. And there's just something, I just can't think that it's anything other but a kind of religious cult. It's people are believing things because they're told that's the truth and they want to believe them for some reason. It's been the fact all through the history of humanity that people like witches were being burned by Christians in Salem 200 years ago, and they were only women. No men were burned as witches, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that's a really logical thing, isn't it? For people to, and there was no uprising against it until some later point. But we are in a situation. I had an interview from Korea where I was basically conned into this interview, thinking it would be an intelligent person that was interviewing me. It was like, it was like someone from Greenpeace was interviewing me. Yeah. And pretty soon they were just saying, well, don't you know this and that? And no, I'm the one who's supposed to be telling you what I know.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not interviewing you, what are you? You're just an activist. Well, you got any science qualifications? No. Right. So that they are true believers. That is the best way to describe them. And they look at that ridiculous group, Extinction Rebellion,
yes,
dressing up like something halfway between an ancient monk and a space traveler or whatever. And what are they? Why are they doing this? And it just comes down to the fact that there is no evidence of a climate crisis. None. And they say, oh, what about the wildfires? Well, that's a really interesting one, because the cause of the wildfires, which almost all occur on public land in the Western United States, where it is quite dry and the forests are made of pines and other pitchy trees, which burn easily in the crown. If you leave all the dead wood on the ground for 20 years, and that's what's happened. And that's why there's been a slight increase in forest fires in the United States. But did you see how the Forest Service erased all the data of the area of land burned before about 1950? They say they don't trust it because they don't know where it came from. Well, it came from them. Who else is it monitoring how many acres of land are burning per year besides the Forest Service?
Well, yeah,
their own data into the garbage to make it look like after Smokey the Bear was invented, there was a huge reduction in forest fires. But about 20 years ago, green politicians and green activists got control of forest management on the public lands. And so they don't want them to do anything there. Just leave it alone because that's nature. Well, when you leave forests alone, dead wood builds up. People don't realize that even in native culture, in Australia and North America, the Aboriginal people in both those places, they, of course, only had fires from wood. They didn't have fossil fuels. So all the dead wood around villages for miles around was collected every fall. And if so, in the spring, there wouldn't be that kind of the fire stick also. They would set fire to the grasslands underneath forests to keep them clean and so that they wouldn't have massive fires. And that's what's not being done in the U.S. West. There's almost no major forest fires on private forest land because they know how to manage the forest. So it's very, very clear what's going on here. They're just saying every forest fire is climate change.
It's climate, yes.
Like as if because the weather's warmer, there's going to be no more forest fires. No, it's a combination of dead wood building up, of people throwing cigarettes out the window, of campfires being left going, of arson in many cases, we now know.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, that's a, I've seen that.
Yeah, well, they just want to bring tension to themselves, I suppose, but that's pretty kinky, you know, risking people's lives in a forest fire like that. But the fact is, forest fires are not growing at an astonishing rate in the world in general. And in wet forests, like where I am on Vancouver Island, there's only a few places that are susceptible to big forest fires because there are some dry spots here. But in rainforests, you don't get much forest fire. And so now they're using that as climate change. It's got nothing to do with climate change. Forest fires can occur in the boreal forest where it's freezing cold most of the year. Big ones. They're caused by lightning. And if it's dry, the forest will burn. It's been happening ever since the beginning of forests.
Wow. All right. Well, in the few minutes we have left here, I was going to ask you about COVID-19 and climate. Here's what's happened. In 2020, the Harvard School of Public Health linked climate and COVID. And here's what they said. The root causes of climate change also increase the risk of pandemics. We need to take climate action to prevent the next pandemic. That was in 2020. Well, fast forward just last month, Journal Nature did a modeling study. Let me make sure that it's Nature. And essentially, climate change will make pandemics like COVID more likely. Climate change could spark future pandemics. And they go on and on. And Bill Gates is warning of the same thing. What is your comment? My sense of this real quick is they essentially failed, you know, in terms of scaring the public. If you look at Gallup polling going back 30 years, but a virus scared everyone, cut across ideology, partisan lines, and they were able to achieve many of the same type of solutions with, in other words, people say the Green New Deal was enacted overnight with COVID policy, with lockdowns, stay-at-home orders, restrictions, economic degrowth, the whole thing. What do you sense when they try to make these scientific claims now that, you know, COVID, unchecked climate change leads to more COVID and other deadly viruses?
I just think it's astonishingly stupid, but they do have effect by doing this, by linking these things. I think it's evil, actually, what they're doing. They don't know that climate change is going to make pandemics. You know, the worst pandemics in the world have been when it was colder, like the Spanish flu. It wasn't as warm then as it is now. It was a slightly cooler time. The Dark Ages and the epidemics that killed a third of the people in the world at that time, that was during a cold period. Cold is the enemy of life. Warm is the friend of life. That's all there is to it. As I said before, there are way more species live where it's warm, including humans. There's a great chart that shows the density population for the latitudes. Like, the vast majority of people live within the subtropics and tropics. There are not a lot of people living in the Arctic or the Antarctic.
Right.
As a matter of fact, no one is living in the Antarctic unless they're on a scientific research station.
Right.
That's the only people living there. There's no villages in Antarctica, not one. The villages in the Arctic are 100 or so people huddled in the winter. We give them fossil fuels now for their energy, but they used to have to burn the oil from marine mammals to keep cold. And the only reason they could survive there with the polar bear was because they had packs of dogs. The packs of dogs saved them from the polar bear killing them and fended them off. And the packs of dogs also corralled polar bears. That's how they got a lot of their food from polar bears. The Eskimos did, the Inuit, as they're more properly called today.
Yeah.
And the dogs would surround the bear and get it going like along all directions. And then they'd come in with stakes and poke holes in it, take it home and eat it. It's not quite as tough today because they've got fossil fuels being sent up there in 45-gallon drums so they can have a nice fire in their house.
But, okay, I think we have.
But still, how many people are living in the Arctic? Anybody could go and live in the Arctic now. You can get stuff shipped up there, food and everything. You can't grow much on Greenland. I mean, they did in the medieval warm period when it was warmer than it is now in southern Greenland, because there were some 3,000 people from Norway, the Vikings, living there.
Okay, well, I think we only have less than about a minute left to go. Let's close this out. Where do you see this debate heading in the next 5-10 years? Is it going to die from its own absurdity, and is the public going to awaken, or are they going to achieve these net zero, this, you know, essentially chemotherapy for the population? My new argument is they treat this energy crisis as necessary chemotherapy, that when we come through, we'll be cancer-free or climate crisis-free in the end. But I like to say we've been misdiagnosed by a quack and don't need the treatment. Where do you see this debate going in about 30 seconds? Just give me your thoughts. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future of fighting this climate insanity?
Well, two to form, I never try to predict the climate, but it could easily go to a very bad place. And we might all be cancer free, but there'll only be about three of us left. You know? it is just so ridiculous, this net zero thing, that the people who, you know, wind and solar, you'd have to build three times the capacity if you're going to try and charge batteries, because the only time you can charge the batteries is when the wind and solar is working and having to supply the whole city as well. So you have to have 2/3 of your power has to be in your batteries. They have done no economic feasibility study or anything of any sort. They're just flying by the seat of their pants here. And they're affecting the whole future of 88 billion people by this most ridiculous and stupid policy that they have adopted, which is backwards. They're sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere, which we finally got to put some back in it after it had been reduced to the lowest level in the history of the Earth in recent times. And we're fixing the problem by bringing a balance back to the global carbon cycle. All the CO2 that we are emitting came from the atmosphere in the first place. We're just putting it back where it came from. And they don't get that, apparently.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Patrick Moore. Appreciate you. Happy, just thrilled, love to have you come back on here. I mean, we have so much we didn't even get to. I'd love to talk to you about, but the author of Fake Invisible Catastrophes of Threats and Doom. Thank you, my friend. Look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you, Dr. Patrick Moore. This has been the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for listening.